Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is broadcast live from sunny Southern California. And this show is brought to you by our favorite city, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Plan your trip today at visitvegas.com. Vegas Raiders 3-0, right? And if you, by the way, if you doubt the power of Vegas, now it still exists. Anybody else realize kind of what's in front of us here in Vegas? We are, just under 2 weeks out from Wilder Fury 3. We hope, right? No COVID issues. We think we hope. And of course the planning of let's have the Raiders be good just when they get fans back in the stands. And I don't know if they're great, but they're good. They're good. They got the Chargers on the road, then they'll have the Bears. I mean, think about that weekend. You can go and see Wilder Fury on a Saturday night and then Bears Raiders on a Sunday afternoon. By the way, Chargers, Monday Night Football next Monday. I nobody else knows this because I just found out I'm going. Taking my dude, we're going. All right, some wins. I understand that what happens when you coach or when you've been coached, you know some of these coaching expressions, right? Where a coach will tell you like, hey, you don't get any more points for style. You don't get any more wins if you win by 60 or if you win by one. It's still just one win. But thinking reasonably and logically, I got to tell you, there were three wins yesterday that jump out to me as being almost worth a win and a half. And each was in a different time slot. The Chargers beating the Chiefs on the road was a gigantic win. Keep in mind, they missed two extra points and still found a way to take down the Chiefs. And they just, got to exhale at the end of a game. Chargers were up 14-3 at the half, and frankly, it should have been more because the Chiefs had several turnovers. The Chiefs take a lead going into the fourth quarter, and usually that's where the Chargers would at least previously wither. They did not wither, and instead, they end up getting a gigantic, gigantic win. And it's one thing to go, hey, it's early in the season, and the Chiefs have been kind of all over the place. Andy Reid, by the way, his health, he's fine, released from the hospital today. Just got a little bit of a health scare. But keep in mind, this is a place in which they rarely win. In the last, like, decade, they've won two times. The other time was when they won 12 games 3 years ago. Having a second-year quarterback, a first-year coach, and taking the comeback from the Chiefs and still finding a way to win, that's like a win and a half. Because it, and yes, you go home scratching your head, do we have the right kicker? But you go home saying like, man, we won even though we gave away 2 points. Gave it away on 2 missed extra points. The other two, which I find to be really, really special wins, and I do think that Baltimore winning on the longest field goal in NFL history, that's a big, because you don't want to be the team that loses to the Lions. And Baltimore's been, two very different results going into yesterday's game. That was a game which you just survive and find a way. But, man, you're going to look back and go, thank goodness we have Justin Tucker. But the Rams beating Tampa in L.A., their first really big game in the new stadium with a viable opponent, a potential Super Bowl team, and with Tom Brady, and, you know, people will say that's Matt Stafford's biggest regular season game ever. I don't actually believe that to be true. He was on playoff teams. He played on plenty of big games. But that was a big one for the Rams on that biggest stage and for him to play that well and then to basically lead start to finish, and it wasn't really in question late into the fourth quarter. That was a big one. And then last night, I don't know what more you can say. Aaron Rodgers was sharp Everything he threw was on target. And yet, the Packers still couldn't score on their next to last two possessions, allowing the door just to be cracked open for San Francisco, who scored with 36 seconds to go, and that was enough to stop Aaron Rodgers. Two gigantic completions to Devontae Adams, and they make a 56-yard field goal, and you go running off thinking, well, we stole one that was almost stolen from us. It feels like those three wins are bigger than any other three wins this week. And while I understand in the standings it only counts for one and that you have to turn around and play somebody else is coming from you, and if you fall into the trap of believing what you saw this week is going to be the facts for the rest of the year, you're going to make a huge mistake. But these three teams, it feels different. The Packers have been to Florida twice and to California three times in the past couple years, and they've looked awful every time until last night. The Rams just didn't have confidence in Jared Goff's desire or ability to throw the ball downfield. Cooper Kupp's always been awesome. They added D-Jax, who it did feel like he was going to drop the ball before the end zone again. But they're cycling through running backs, through all these injuries, and they need to push the ball downfield, and they found a guy who will do it. I think Tyler Higbee helps, but I also think just having a quarterback that they believe opens up the entire field to them, and he played well. And he did so against a team that everybody respects, a quarterback everybody respects, and a defense that really got after Tom Brady. Really got after him. And then, of course, there's the Chargers win, which we've been telling you for the last 6 months. When healthy, one of the most talented teams in football. And everybody thinks they got a dude in Justin Herbert, but how would he react in the second year? Right? Second year is sometimes tougher than first years because you're given a bigger playbook, more responsibilities, and you're only started for 1 year in the NFL. So far, so good. This is Aaron Rodgers talking about pulling off the big win.
Give some legitimacy to some of the things we've been talking about, that was kind of an aberration and that we are a talented football team. It felt like in the locker room today that we finally had the energy that I've been waiting to see. And before the game, it wasn't the type of energy we had in Jacksonville, but I knew we needed a spark. But the energy in the locker room post-game, that felt like a win. You know, it felt like there was such a growth moment for us, and I'm really, really happy for the guys to feel that. And, you know, it feels like, okay, now we're on our way. Now we can get into this. Now we know how to win, and we can get this thing moving in the right direction.
That's a win and a half. Right? When you have to win a football game twice, when you have that sort of energy, when everybody, aha, the aha moment, that's a win. That's a win and a half. And I think the Rams got that. I think the Chargers got that. It doesn't mean that they win this week and that they mollywop, but I do think that sometimes you can gain, you know, for the Rams, they led that thing almost tip to finish. I mean, that's an amount of confidence they can have. For the Packers, they were the better team and still nearly lost and found a way and were completely organized in their 2 minute. And he made a couple of incredible throws. They clocked it. They got the special teams on, and the field goal kicker made it. It looked like a practice. It was perfect. And for the Chargers to score when they scored, you know, the conversions that they got, and beating Kansas City in Kansas City, and really kind of challenging Kansas City, playing a lot of man, something that, you know, Gus Bradley would never do, but some of that was their personnel. I think there's a lot of growth there too. Those are wins. In a half. Coming up next, we'll hear what former teammate of Aaron Rodgers has to say about his season to this point.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So the Chargers have a new head coach, right? Most of you guys know that. He came over from the Rams and he's only been in the National Football League for 6 years, which is crazy. His name is Brandon Staley. He was the defensive mastermind last year with the Rams, but a guy who, outside of saying, kind of has a little Saban to him. He said this about his star young quarterback.
I felt like Justin was the best player on the field, and I think Mike Williams was right there with him. We want to put the ball in Justin Herbert's hand and have him be the decider. That's what I felt like was best in the game. Felt like where we were at with the wind, which had a lot to do with the kicking game today, I felt like putting the ball in Justin's hands was the right decision, and he certainly came through for us today.
He came through. The win caused two extra points to go astray. Obviously, changes what you're going to do with field goals. Mike Williams, 9 catches, 122 yards, 2 touchdowns, had that big 43-yard reception as well. And the Chargers, despite the fact they didn't really run the football, they couldn't get it going with Austin Eckler, they end up winning 30-24 on the road. Gigantic game. Here's Herbert on his star wide receiver.
Mike Williams changes our offense. He's one of those guys that we knew going into this year we needed to get him the ball more. When you spread the ball out, Keenan, Jared Cook, Mike Williams, it doesn't get much tougher than that.
He's right. He's right. And they fit together quite well, you know? It's like you got Eckler, who is kind of a hybrid back. You got Cook, who's a really, really big athletic body. You got Keenan Allen, who's not a burner but a great route runner. And you got Mike Williams, who, though not necessarily a burner, a guy who's big, deep downfield threat who can throw the ball up to. I mean, that's really kind of what you got there. You got they still have Guyton. They have they had that huge guy, Donald Parham. You guys ever seen him? Ramos, you ever seen Donald Parham play?
I have not, Doug.
6'8", 237.
Wow.
Tight end. 6'8". I mean, Jared Cook's a bit like a big dude too, but he's 6'5", 250. This dude's 6'8", 240. They got a lot of dudes to throw the ball up to. A lot of options. It's a fun team. Isn't it fun when your team, I'll tell you what the best feeling is. So I was at a basketball tournament in the morning. I got 2 hours in between a couple of games. And we went to a sports bar because we had like an hour, just not enough time to run home, but not enough time to really go anywhere. We went to this place called Daly's. And to walk into the bar, sports bar, when your team's already won their morning game, you're on the West Coast, right? So it's like 1 o'clock, your team just won, and all these other fans got their whole team worried about, right? That is a great feeling. Like it's almost as good as Thursday night. I think it's better than Thursday night football, because Thursday night football, you almost feel like the team didn't play this weekend. They had a bye. They're not even on. But watching your team win, you get the energy, the rush, the excitement. They win, and then you're like, now I'll just watch football and enjoy it the rest of the day. It's my experience. So let's welcome in Brady Papingo, who joins us, of course, former Packers linebacker, 8 years in the NFL as a linebacker, 6 of those with the Packers, including winning a Super Bowl. Let me start with the Rams. I'll get to the Packers in the night game. It was a great game. But what were your thoughts? Was Tampa and their defensive backfield getting shredded by Cooper Kupp time and again? Was that alarming, or was it more the Rams and how seemingly smooth this transition of quarterbacks has been?
It's twofold, because if you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers secondary, they've been decimated by injuries. And Bowles, he wants to run a lot of press coverage. So man-to-man, high risk, high reward. You know the old saying with the old Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, you don't risk it, no biscuit. Yeah. Right? So that's just the philosophy offensively and defensively. So they're trying to break in this new defensive backfield, basically, running this high risk, like really high pressure coverage against an explosive offense with Sean Jackson, Kupp. You know, you got all these weapons, and you got Stafford to control the ball all over the field. And on top of it, the illusion of complexity that McVay always talks about, where he's got motions and misdirections and the zone blocking and all that kind of stuff. And it's a tough matchup early on in the season. Now, as you gain more experience and you get further along into the season and you get some guys in your defensive backfield who you're more comfortable with, they're more comfortable with you, the whole dynamics can change drastically. But as it is right now, that was a function of a decimated secondary along with an explosive offense.
What's your take on Stafford now that we've seen him in like a more pressure-filled situation?
He's just the guy I've always known. I mean, he's a gunslinger, can make all the throws. When you're with the Lions, unfortunately, as we all saw yesterday, they seem to be somewhat snake-bitten, okay? And it goes even with some of their players. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going on up in there to Detroit, but he's the same guy. You know, and it does help to come to Los Angeles and to have McVay as your coach, and yeah, you're kind of in a new environment. And I do believe the fact that their defense is so good offensively, you can play loose, feel like you have a safety net, because you know that defense, if you did throw an interception or you didn't have a perfect
day, let's say, offensively, that defense is still going to keep you in it. All you got to do is put maybe one or two drives in it at the end to win it. So he's got a new life, like a newfound life about him, you know, but it's the same guy, a phenomenal arm talent, an excellent competitor, just in a new environment. Can it lead to a Super Bowl championship? Time will tell. I mean, it's a long season. It's a marathon.
It's Doug Gottlieb's show here on Fox Sports Radio. Brady Papinga's our guest, of course, played linebacker 8 years in the National Football League, six with the Packers. How big was that win for the Packers?
It was huge, and I laugh because, man, two weeks ago, the sky was falling. Aaron Rodgers was goofing around too much in the offseason, being too much of a problem. He was checked out. The guy looked like he was some, like, hobo that you'd find on the street corner that was all drugged up with his hair flipping everywhere, not very well shaved. It looked like a mess against the Saints down in Jacksonville. And lo and behold, they beat the Lions. Everybody's like, ah, of course you're going to beat the Lions at home. And then you play a really good, undefeated at this point, San Francisco 49er team in the conditions they were, where they had 37 seconds to have to get into field goal range and win it. And, I mean, that's Rome. That throw over Fred Warner's hand, I've Amazing. Actually lived that multiple times where I'm like, ooh, they're going to try to throw it over my head. Yeah, right. I jump up there. I remember Bo Favre and Aaron doing the same thing. I'm jumping up there. I might knock this down. And literally the ball, like somehow, I don't know what it is. It's like a force field around the ball. It just goes right over your fingertips. And sure enough, it falls into the lap of the receiver. And you're like, what the? That was more than deep enough. You know, and it sure enough happened to the all-pro linebacker, my BYU alum, compadre, Fred Warner. I mean, that throw is just phenomenal. You know, and then backs it up with another nice find of in the middle there. And lo and behold, they go and they kick the field goal to win it. So, I mean, it was awesome. I just, for the Packers and for where they were at 2 weeks ago, it's a complete juxtaposition. And Aaron, I think he feels a little validated because he's telling everybody, yeah, it's just one game. I mean, if you remember a couple of years ago, I think they're 0-1. Well, they started the first three games 1-2. Everybody's freaking out, and he's telling everybody, just chill out. We're going to get everything straight, and they did. So Aaron's not a guy to panic. And, no, they did not need to hang out all offseason together, every waking moment, in order to have a successful regular season, and even in the postseason, as everybody's learning right now.
Are the Raiders for real?
Oh, yeah. And that's because of Derek Carr. Derek Carr has finally deciphered the crypto encryption offense of our guy there with the Raiders, Gruden. That guy's offense, you guys heard it on Monday Night Football. I mean, it literally is like an encryption. It's like you're trying to break into some kind of code, you know? I mean, he's got so many words for so many different things. And finally, Derek Carr is able to just simplify everything. His first few years with Gruden, you can see to where Carr was a little bit kind of like, wow, this is a lot to digest. And he's an experienced quarterback. Now it's second nature. He's been with it enough, and now he can just go play. Lo and behold, look at this. A guy who can just go play? I mean, you wouldn't believe how many guys are running around the NFL right now that if you put them in that same situation in terms of just letting them play, don't have them think, just go play. They'd be phenomenal. That's where Derek Carr is. That's where the Raiders are at. Their defense is coming around. Gus Bradley's been a nice revelation for him there. And so, I mean, it's they got a good thing going. And then it's the Raiders. I mean, they just keep winning sloppy, and it's just kind of fun to watch. And, I mean, it's just who they are. I mean, it's very par to their brand. And that makes them for real.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, look, I understand the offensive line has been a mess for the Steelers, but there are things you see Ben Roethlisberger do to where you're like, God, he should not be out there. He's bad. But he's making a bunch of money, and he's Ben Roethlisberger. How much of the blame for their offensive ineptitude do you lay at the feet of their future Hall of Fame quarterback?
Well, he's the quarterback. And everything, the buck stops and starts with the quarterback. And by golly, he looks like he is struggling, just moving, you know. And I know he's had that elbow surgery not too long ago. He is, long in the tooth and those kinds of things. Now, actually, Davenport's been nice for them. You'd think that they would lean more towards the run. You know, that's the – and so basically coaching adjustment for them is they're going to have to turn Ben Roethlisberger into a far more complementary piece than they maybe believe he should be, which they probably should have done this 2 or 3 years ago. And you hit the nail on the head in one respect, that their offensive line isn't this bell cow offensive line like it used to be, where you could literally just power football behind them and then play action pass and help your quarterback out. But still, that's why they invented the zone blocking scheme. If you go to all these teams, and Shanahan made this famous in the late 90s, when you have kind of just scrappy offensive linemen, they don't have to be big bulldozers, and you just get them moving one side of the, and you kind of couple that with some play action, some boots, they call it, waggles is another terminology used, which is misdirection that's coupled with the running game. That can make a very average offensive line decent, especially when you got an electric running back in Najee Davenport like the Steelers have. And that's the reason why they drafted Najee Davenport, is to be that guy. So I'm not going to sit there and say the Steelers are all of a sudden going to just be terrible. I mean, their struggles do have to do with the fact that it is Ben Roethlisberger playing and their expectations of him being in his prime. But they just have to have an adjustment to where they can't look at him as this elite quarterback anymore. They have to look at him as, you're a complimentary piece. You're just going to keep the defense honest. Our main dude now is Najee Davenport. And then we got to figure out a scheme that's going to help this offensive line cover up some of their deficiencies, which it does exist. So we'll see if these coaches can make the adjustments. It's time to do it. Like I said, we're early in the marathon of the season. But there's no way, yeah, you can just hit your trailer to the Ben Roethlisberger Mack truck and think he's going to take you to the Super Bowl. He's just too old and too slow, and he's – you know, he struggles moving, unfortunately. But, hey, he can still keep the defense honest with his arm, which at this point, that's probably all you're hoping from the guy.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. How much of Chicago's failings are on Justin Fields? How much of it was on the play calling?
Well, but, I mean, you got a quarterback back there that's a running quarterback. If you're not going to at least let him run, then what are you doing? That's always the question. And these coaches in the NFL, they tend to just kind of overthink things. Matt Nagy's doing that with Justin Fields. It's like, it's simple. Get into the read option and have him reverse out and half roll. Have him roll this way, boot that way. Read option, have him, I mean, just get him on the move, for crying out loud. And you know who that's going to help? It's not only going to help him, because that's going to be something he's familiar with, and he did in college, it's going to help their offensive line. Which, for some reason, on 21 of 30-odd throws, they did a what they call a five-man protection, which, if you got Myles Garrett out there, you might not want to do that, because that means either him or some other guy got on that offense, or excuse me, defensive line is one-on-one. So it's pretty simple stuff. I don't know what was going on with Matt Nagy. I don't know if he is trying to send a message, because this could very well be the case. It sounds like a conspiracy theory, but some coaches, I don't know if it's conscious or subconsciously, think this way. They think, hey, you know what? Andy Dalton's our guy. He's been our guy. We want Justin Fields to stay on the sidelines because we feel that's where he's best in terms of his development. So we're going to just stick with what we would do if Andy Dalton was there, kind of keeping Justin Fields as a placeholder, knowing we're not setting him up for success, which is fine because it fits our master plan. And which I think is stupid, because your master plan should be to win football games. And if that means your rookie quarterback comes in and you run a college offense, then you go that direction. So it's a lot of issues going on here, but it just seems to be very simply, coaches are forgetting the very thing that you're trying to do. Win football games. How do you win football games? You put players in position to what they're comfortable with. And that was absolutely not the case with Matt Nagy and Chicago Bears with Justin.
I guess I'd say my pushback would be, you know, maybe his fear is if you put in the college offense, then you have to reteach him how to play football in an NFL offense heading forward, right? Like, they don't want him to be Lamar Jackson. They want him to be Pat Mahomes, and this is what they did with Pat Mahomes when he was in Kansas City.
Well, the pushback to that one is simply this. You don't feed a baby meat. You start with the milk. And that's basically what you could use as the college offense. I saw it with RG3. RG3 went out there, even Colin Kaepernick. They had him, and they're running, you know, Colin Kaepernick's running basically what Lamar Jackson runs. But then lo and behold, these two guys, both Colin Kaepernick and RG3, come to this conclusion where they're like, we don't want to be running quarterbacks anymore. We think it's too hard. And teams are figuring this out, which they don't. It's an option. People don't figure out option football. It's just impossible because you're always choosing to do the very thing that the defense is weak at, basically. That's option football. And so they try to make these guys pocket passers before they were ready. But what put him in position to, at the very least, get game reps was the fact that they were running college offenses. So why not use the college offense to allow a player to get game time reps? The game time reps is where the progression is going to accelerate the most. And then from there, you slowly start to integrate more of, between quotation, pro style stuff, which right now, the pro style and the college style is basically becoming the same thing. The only difference is exposing your quarterback to the running game, which Lamar Jackson, if he can continue to do well, and if the Ravens can pop off a Super Bowl championship, that's going to go out the window because more teams will be open to running their quarterbacks more, which is even more like college football. So I do believe it's necessary if you're going to put a young guy out there to have him do the very thing that made him successful in college. If you don't, then you're really going to be putting him in danger because he's going to be sitting in the pocket, which he's not used to, trying to do a route progression, which he's not used to, right, with big guys like Myles Garrett bearing down on him, potentially the blind side. And that's even worse than if you have him running, because at least as he's running, he, for the most part, can see people trying to tackle him and can avoid him.
Brady Papinga joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Brady, great stuff, man. Always love it. Your passionate opinion, especially from a guy who knows a ton of football, having played at the highest level and winning a Super Bowl. Thanks for being our guest.
It's always a pleasure, Doug. Take care, my man.
You the man. Brady Papinga, of course, stud linebacker, Packers for 6 years, part of that Super Bowl winning team, at Brady Papinga on Twitter. When a train hits a vehicle at a railway crossing, the results are often deadly. Be cautious at crossings. If the signals are going, don't be tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Even if you don't see a train stop, trains can't, paid for by NHTSA. Is it a big deal that Matt Nagy won't name a starting quarterback for this week at this time? Give you my thoughts next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we get you caught up on all the stories of the day. We do so by playing a game.
This is Game Time.
It's Game Time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Dan Byer, what do you got, my man?
Doug, the game today is...
Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Not only just focusing on the NFL, but the entire sports world over the past weekend, but we started the National Football League. Big deal, little deal, or no deal. That Bengals wide receiver Tyler Boyd said this about the Steelers after their win in Pittsburgh yesterday.
The good thing about that win, not only did the Steelers feel that, everybody in the country felt it, because the last plays of the game for them, they gave up. You could see it. They had three drops in a row. For a team to see that is giving us more power, giving us the antidote to know how good we are.
Saying the Steelers gave up at the end. Big deal, little deal, or no deal?
I think it's a big deal. I think most people are going to say it's a little deal. You know, football wasn't a winnable game. But, you know, my thing is always with any of my team, like, you're not going to stop fighting. Not going to quit. And there's, what do they say in Pittsburgh? The standard is the standard, and the standard is to play until the final buzzer. So I think it's a big deal because it's Pittsburgh. They're supposed to have this culture, and they did flat give up. I think that's fair.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal, Doug, that Bears head coach Matt Nagy still can't name a starting quarterback heading into their Week 4 matchup against the Lions.
Well, it's not just, everybody just thinks it's the Red Rifle and Justin Fields. But he said Foles is a possibility too, right?
Yes.
I mean, it does not seem like they have a great plan.
No, it does not. It does not. And that, I mean, net 1 yard passing yesterday for Chicago.
Is that bad?
Yeah, it's not advantageous. You could say that. A lot of heat on Matt Nagy and not designing anything for Justin Fields. To play to his strengths. So
it was bad. There's just nothing else I could say about it. It's just bad. Now, we should also point out that though Justin Fields does run, it's not like he was Lamar Jackson or he was Cam Newton in college. Right? Like, he's not been that kind of runner.
Sure.
He's a good runner. He's also a good thrower. You know,
yes.
I think he's a more advanced thrower than Cam was coming out, and probably more advanced runner. In all honesty, he's a more advanced thrower than Lamar was coming out. So I think there's part of it. I also think that I believe that what Nagy's trying to do is what they did in Kansas City, and everything is different than it was in Kansas City. In Kansas City, they kept the offense the same, and they had Mahomes adjust to the offense. They give him 16 weeks, and week 17 he played. I think that's what they're trying to do with Justin Fields. One, their personnel, surrounding personnel isn't as good. Two, the offense itself isn't as good. And three, he's not Mahomes, nor he's had the time to develop.
Yeah. No, very well put. There's only one Patrick Mahomes. Big deal, little deal, or no deal, that Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury had Matt Prater try a 68-yard field goal at the end of the half yesterday in Jacksonville, only to have Jamal Agnew run it back for a 109-yard kick return for a score.
You know, it's interesting. Here we're celebrating, and granted, it was the end of the game. There wasn't a decision in having Justin Tucker kick the longest field goal in NFL history. Meanwhile, Matt Prater, who's been a great kid, he was Justin Tucker before Justin Tucker. When Tebow time was big, it was because Prater was his kicker. Prater was unbelievable. Now, different when you're playing in the humidity of Jacksonville as opposed to where he's played at times when he was in Detroit or when he was in Denver, when you have greater range because of being in a dome or being in altitude. But the difference between genius and idiot is like 3 yards on a field goal. That's really what it is.
I thought there's a lot more to it. I mean, you're playing a Jacksonville team that is, you are significantly better than. The last thing that you would need is for them to get any momentum. If you wanted to try to score points, have your quarterback throw it up to DeAndre Hopkins or A.J. Green, just like the Cardinals did last year. I thought it was an atrocious decision by Cliff Kingsbury yesterday. That's my editorial, Doug. Moving on.
No, listen, I think most people believe that. You have to know unequivocally if your guy can make it, right? If your guy can make it. And then you have to prepare for the possibility of it being run back.
Yeah, and they weren't prepared for it.
Nope.
And the end of the half, as you said, different than the end of the game for what the Ravens did in Detroit. And as you said, Detroit different than Jacksonville. Big deal, little deal, or no deal, switching to college football, that quarterback Spencer Rattler was booed by some Oklahoma fans of their win Saturday against West Virginia.
I think that's a big deal. I think that's a big, big deal. I think this is what happens when you professionalize amateur athletics. And I don't, it's not that they booed him. It's that you had students cheering, "We want Caleb. We want Caleb." They were chanting the backup's name. I have never heard that in a college campus ever before. And there's three parts to it. It started as message board guy, and he became social media guy and barstool guy, where you can say anything you want. I can say anything I want because I want to. And the professionalism, professionalizing amateur athletics. And you can say, hey, some of these guys were on the take previously. Some of them were. Some were. I don't think all of them or even a lot of them were, but some of them were, no question. But what happens is once it becomes public and it's a known thing and he's now guys are like, look, he's a pro. He can take it. He's a big, like, dude, he's a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. He had a bad half. He hadn't playing that good. And I don't know, like Rattler has last year he looked like a pirate with the earrings, you know, and whatever. But he's obviously a very talented kid. I think Lincoln Riley knows a thing or two about what he's looking for. If Lincoln wants to play him, Lincoln should play him. And I think you're allowed to boo. I would never boo my team. Like, what's the actual point? Oh, yeah, by the way, like, why would anybody go and play for a school where their home fans are booing them? But if their expectations are so high, they're underperforming, and you want to grumble and boo a little bit, that's fine. That's better. But cheering for the backup and chanting the backup's name, and I'm more anti-booing than I'm letting on, but cheering the backup, I think that's a big, big deal. I think it's a problem. I don't think it's just a problem with Oklahoma and how Spencer is viewed, but I also think it's a problem with college athletics and one of those unintended consequences of the recent NIL changes.
Yeah, I think they're also a victim of their own success.
Yeah.
Because you think that any quarterback
quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if, guess what? If Spencer Rattler isn't getting it done, just put in the guy next, you know, that's next in line, and then he'll become Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray. Like, it's not just at Oklahoma, it's other top programs as well. A big deal, little deal, or no deal, Doug, that Ohio State will wear an all scarlet color rush uniform for their home game October 30th against Penn State. They've never worn scarlet pants before, they've always had the silver pants. with their normal uniform, but going.
I think they're horrendous.
Mm.
I think they
look pretty sharp, and I don't like them veering from. I love Ohio State's uniforms, but I think that they, look pretty good. Is that a big deal, little deal, or no deal? No deal for you.
No deal. This is where we are.
All right. Big deal, little deal, or no deal, Doug. That Pelicans forward Zion Williamson underwent surgery in the offseason to repair a broken bone in his foot, but should be ready for the season opener.
I think it's a big deal. It's another injury helping into the narrative that he's too heavy and his body's not going to hold up. Right? Like, that's a big deal. It's in his foot, and foot stress fractures, you know, it's like a 50-50 shot, seems like. Will it heal on time? And then you got to go and get the rod put in, the fifth metatarsal, whatever. That is a big deal.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that the San Diego Padres right now are a 500 baseball club and were eliminated from postseason contention. 78-78 with six games to go. Big deal, little deal, or no deal.
Who is that?
The Padres.
Are they really 500 now?
Yes.
What the hell happened to the Padres?
They went 2-58 since Max Scherzer would not go to San Diego. That's what happened. I actually think that played a part in something. I don't know. I just have
made... Well, as you point out, they had a lot of injuries as well.
I mean,
I didn't know they were 500. I knew they were out of it. I stopped looking. They're like, they're 500?
Yes. Yeah, 78-78. They are way back, yeah, and eliminated this past weekend. Finally, Doug, big deal, little deal, or no deal, that the United States won the Ryder Cup over Europe 19-9 in the most dominant win in the modern era.
I think it was a big deal, not just because of the win. It was the dominance of the win. And then what appeared to be a thawing of an icy relationship, right, between Brooks and Bryson. Like now they're like teammates, and then I don't know if they're boys. They probably exchange numbers, but I thought that was a big thing.
And there could be a pay-per-view with them coming up maybe in the future, you know, kind of like the match that they did. There are rumors that maybe they will team up.
But if that was what they're going to do, why didn't they keep the rivalry going, at least out in public, so it was a better watch for watching the golf match?
That's game time.